Does single motherhood hurt children? Our guest this hour says yes, and will tell us how and what she sees as the answer to the sometimes lifelong economic and social problems facing the children of single-parent families, many of which are living in poverty. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, March 12th. Few would argue that children living in poverty in a single-parent household are getting the best start in life, but what is the answer to the social and economic immobility that could follow that child for life? Is it programs to encourage marriage, as some conservatives would argue? Is it more government assistance to lift single mothers and their children out of poverty, as some on the left would advocate? Or is it something else? How about policies that would discourage single motherhood? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Kay Heimowitz, a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and a contributing editor at City Journal. She is the author of Marriage and Caste in America, Separate and Unequal Families in a Post-Marital Age. And she also wrote a recent op-ed piece for the New York Times, How Single Motherhood Hurts Kids. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for being with us. So, how does single motherhood hurt kids?
Well, let's set a little context here before we go on, because the title of the article in question in the New York Times may give a false impression. What's happened over the last 30 to 40 years is that we've seen a big gap develop, a marriage gap develop between college-educated women and men and their children on the one hand, and those with less than a college degree on the other. Increasingly, college-educated women are the ones who are married and who tend to stay married. Their divorce rates have gone down considerably since 1980. And their children have not only more money because educated people tend to make more, but also more stability and more of the sort of emotional resources that are available in more stable family environments. On the other hand, kids who are growing up whose parents are already less educated and therefore more likely to be less affluent are growing up in much more unstable circumstances. Those marriages are much more unlikely to remain stable throughout the child's life if they are married. But they're also far more likely to never to have occurred in the first place. So non-marital births are very common among less educated people and not among educated people. So there is this combination. When we're talking about single motherhood in this sense, we're talking about single motherhood for low-income Americans.
Get it. So the why not just help these low-income mothers with children? Why not give them more government assistance to lift them out of poverty?
Well, of course we do, and many have been lifted out of poverty. We have all sorts of arrangements, programs, everything from Medicaid to daycare help to food stamps and so on and so forth. And you know, in many in New York City where I live, the special education programs, which are terribly expensive in the schools, tend to be dominated by the children of single mothers. So there are all kinds of things that we are doing to help. And in fact, the poverty rates are a little better than they used to be. That happened after the welfare reform bill in 1996. There's, you know, you could do more. There's no question about it. There's always another program. More cash benefits. We have an EITC program, Earned Income Tax Credit, that means more money in the bank accounts of single parents. So we are doing a great deal. I mean, the question then is, how much more should we be doing or can we do? And that gets us into a whole other territory that we maybe want to go into.
Yeah, well, we have an hour. So,
okay.
No, wait. Though you do in your piece point out that liberals say correctly that poverty rates for single-parent households are lower in most other advanced economies where the welfare state is more generous.
Correct.
So maybe we should be more generous.
Okay. So a couple things to keep in mind here. Number one, the poverty rates are a bit lower. They're lower for all kinds of groups. In other words, it isn't just the single mother issue, because the welfare state is much more powerful there. But nevertheless, single parent families are much less affluent than other families. In other words, not like there's inequality when you do have a more robust welfare state. You still have a big gap between single parent families and married couple families. So that's number one. Number two is, most of the research on low-income families suggests that we have a different kind of problem here than is the case in other developed countries. The most important work has come from a researcher named Kathy Eden. She's now at Johns Hopkins, who has spent a lot of time living in low-income communities. And what she's found is that, unlike their more educated peers, younger, low-income women tend to stop using contraception soon, that is several weeks or months after they start a sexual relationship. That is, this isn't just a sort of accidental thing exactly. They often get pregnant with somebody who doesn't have much commitment to them and to whom they are not very committed, who they have not known for very long. The relationship tends to be very fragile, and about a third of unmarried parents are still together by the time their children reach five. That is, two-thirds of them have broken up by the time the children reach five. That means that in a lot of these relationships, and really the majority of these relationships, there is another child by a either earlier or later relationship. So experts talk about this as multi-partner fertility. They're much more likely to repartner and start quote unquote second families, whether they're married or not, in America than they are elsewhere. But it's particularly a problem among the unmarried parents, where there never was much of a commitment and much of a thinking ahead about the relationship to begin with. So the multi-partner fertility really complicates relationships, no matter how much money you have, because kids don't tend to do well when those transitions between, let's say, one family to another, when you import into a family life, a new partner, another baby, by that new partner, a new set of in-laws and grandparents, and so forth. These are conditions that create problems for children, and don't care how much money you have. So we have a different thing going on in the United States, and that's where we need to really focus ourselves and stop simply talking about adopting the welfare state of other countries when our conditions are rather different.
Yeah, why are they so different here than in Europe?
Well, it's not clear. I mean, you know, we can go into a whole explanation of how Americans tend to be less they tend to be more flighty, shall we say, more restless to move on. There just tends to be a stronger culture in the developed countries of Europe of you wait before you have your baby till you're in a committed relationship. So even though they don't necessarily marry in an official sense as much as we do, they do tend to wait till the couple is more firmly established, more firmly committed to each other. And again, why that is a fairly complicated question, probably having to do with big cultural differences, cultural, religious, and structural differences.
We are talking about single motherhood and children, and how single mothers with children living in poverty certainly is hurting those families. What's the answer to this? Our guest wrote a piece for the New York Times where she notes that liberals say the answer is more government support. She doubts that's the answer. The right says that the answer is more programs to promote marriage. We'll talk a little bit about why that may not be the answer. What is the answer? We'll find out. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 20 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, March 12th. We are talking about how single motherhood hurts children with our guest, Kay Heimowitz, who is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and a contributing editor at City Journal, author of Marriage and Caste in America, Separate and Unequal Families in a Post-Marital Age. We are talking with her about a piece that she wrote for the New York Times, the Great Divide series about inequality. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions on what can be done to help the children of single mothers, single parent families. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, you, Kay, point out in the piece that conservatives would say let's have more programs to encourage marriage in the United States, but that's not exactly working, isn't it? Don't we have those programs?
Well, we have some of them, and no, they have not worked particularly well. I would say that at this point, most conservatives I know who are looking at the data are backing off from marriage promotion. You know, it's a big party, so there are lots of disagreements on that. But the marriage promotion programs have not worked. I never thought they would, and for this reason that's implied by the story I just told you. When you have the multi-partner fertility that we is so common among low-income couples, then it's not even clear who should marry whom. In fact, there's a paper that one scholar wrote on that precise question: who should marry whom? Because if there's a father who has a child with a woman and also has a child by a previous relationship or perhaps a subsequent relationship, well, where is the marriage? Which marriage is supposed to take place? And in addition, as I've mentioned before, a lot of the relationships happen in a very, I don't want to say casual way exactly, although that can be the case, but a less than mindful way. So it's not clear why a couple that has the child together should be married. They are often have no history, no deep well of affection, and certainly no commitment to each other. So I wasn't surprised to find out that the marriage promotion programs don't tend to do very well.
And we do have some callers and some Facebook comments. Before we go into more depth as to what you think might help, let's take some calls. Tim in Whitewater is with us. Hi, Tim.
Yeah, I'm really glad you're having this conversation. It's something I've been thinking about for a while when you read about all this. And, you know, personally, I think, you know, marriage is important and does work, and it should be the case, but I'm also realistic enough to realize that that isn't always the case. I think the key to this hinges on, and it's the word she used just a second ago, commitment. If regardless of it's a casual relationship or not, if people are going to have a casual relationship, i.e. meaning sex, and a child is going to result, there should be a cultural bias to say, you know, you're responsible for that child. You cannot raise families now. This is no wonder people are in poverty when you've got two people making you know, $10-$15 an hour, $20-$25,000 a year, and they're both paying rent, and you're trying to raise a child paying for two rent households and things like that, it just doesn't work. And all the government programs in the world throwing money after this aren't going to solve it. It comes down to a case of people that are propagating need to have some personal responsibility for the result of that, you know, whether it's an instantaneous lust thing or an affair. I mean, that's what it comes down to. We've got to build up that idea of you're responsible for your actions, and you've got a child now, and you have some responsibility there.
How do we do that, Kay, or what's your reaction to that?
Well, my reaction is that I think most people do feel responsible for their kids. One of the interesting things that's come up in Kathy Eden's research in recent years is that a lot of the men who we've ordinarily described as deadbeats, who are very irresponsible and so on and so forth, are actually quite enamored of their children and quite excited when their girlfriends become pregnant. And it's at that point, in fact, that the relationships, which, as I mentioned before, are kind of a little young and early, become much more committed once the pregnancy occurs. In fact, that seems to be the impetus for calling it a, you know, more committed relationship. And, you know, they want to be there. They want to step up for those kids. But, you know, what we're finding over and over again is that when there is no settled relationship between the parents, it's extremely difficult for fathers to maintain that involvement for no other reason than you might have a new man in the house when the mother goes on to a new relationship, and that makes it quite difficult to maintain those connections with your children.
Yeah. So, what does the research say about this giving up on contraception very early into a relationship? Women they want to have babies even if they're living in poverty?
Yeah, well, that's what Kathy Eden found. Was it's not so much that they actively say, oh, you know, I'm planning to have a baby. You know, it's not quite like that. That's a sort of middle class approach to these things. But it is the case that about 40% of non-marital births are planned or intended, as they put it in the research. So that's 40%. That still means that the majority are not planned. But what the experts who are studying the use of contraception find is that a lot of what we think of as intentional or unintentional, well, it just gets blurrier than that. A lot of times people will say, well, I didn't mean to get pregnant right now, but they still find themselves pregnant and have no intention of certainly aborting the child. Although abortion rates are quite high among particularly among low income blacks, not so much Hispanics and low income whites. So it's not, you know, I think the whole concept of intentionality doesn't quite work when we're talking about becoming pregnant. One possibility that a lot of people are talking about is more long-acting contraception, of the sort that people don't have to make decisions about every time they're in the mood. So, and that's a possible, that could be of some help.
What would you, I mean, encourage women to go on the long-acting contraception
exactly,
somehow?
Exactly. And, you know, I have some uneasiness about that. It feels a little bit forced family planning, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. In other words, you're not asking people to make decisions and to run their lives in responsible ways. You're just simply saying, well, we can't trust you to do this in a way that we might want. So therefore, we'll make it so you don't have to make a decision at all. But nevertheless, it seems like one possible way of at least reducing the number of non-marital births.
Shouldn't low-income people be allowed to have children too? I mean, should we? I mean, is it? Why don't we let them have that choice?
Okay, well, you know, when we think about families, and every single human society has had a family, we're thinking about one way of assigning a male to every child, because otherwise what you've got are women and children as the central core unit of the family. And that's where we're going these days. And it says that men really don't have much of a role to play, or they're kind of extraneous or voluntary, or you can take them or leave them. And it seems like an odd way to go when we are quite rightly emphasizing equality between men and women. And in terms of letting poor people have children, of course they should be able to have children, but they should, everybody should be able to have children if that's what they want, but they have to be able to take care of them. I mean, why should they not be able to have children? They should be able to have children and take care of children. And, you know, I, for one, am all in favor of doing more to bolster wages at the bottom in order to make that easier.
Let's hold it there. We'll continue our conversation after we check the latest news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Do we need more policies that would discourage single motherhood? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Wednesday, March 12th. We are talking with a guest who wrote a piece, an op-ed piece for the New York Times on how single motherhood hurts children. These are single mothers who are in poverty. And we're talking about why this is and what can be done about it, and welcoming your questions and your reactions. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Kay Heimowitz, a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, a contributing editor at City Journal. She is the author of Marriage and Caste in America, Separate and Unequal Families in a Postmarital Age. And let's take a caller who's been waiting through news, Mark in Oconomowoc. Hello, Mark.
Good morning. I just wanted to make a comment that, you know, with our American culture, we have a why wait when you can have it now kind of consumerist attitude. I'd be curious to know if there were rent-to-own stores or payday loan places in Europe as well, where we don't have to wait to have things. I think that we need to have maybe some stake in the game for the fathers who may fail to support their children. So, for instance, if you fail to provide some type of monetary or other support to your own children, that after some period of time, say a year, that the state could then offer you this free mandatory vasectomy, which may put some effort into at least having the fathers of these single-parent families think twice and have some responsibility. Did you get a comment on that?
I want to remind you that something I said before, that a lot of the fathers really are quite committed. They don't have much money. So what happens is that although they are expected, and most states insist on this, they are expected to contribute to the child's care and upbringing. They often don't have the money to give the mother. So even if you have a child support arrangement, they are often unable to go along with that. In addition, remember, in terms of the multi-partner fertility that I've been talking about, that makes it even more difficult to get fathers to pay up, as we often think of it. There simply isn't any water in the well. So that's one thing. I don't know about European policies on payday loans or anything like that, so I can't really comment on it. But I do think that there is something about American culture that has said to people, basically follow your bliss, do what you want, It's not just that you are going to have a child, but that somehow it's just going to be okay. And the government will not only help, but make sure that everything goes okay, the child doesn't need a father. And I think when you asked before, Joy, about don't poor people deserve to have children too? Of course they do, but there is no, it's not free. You know, somebody is going to pay for that child, whether it's the father and mother or somebody else. And in many, many cases, what single motherhood seems to mean is that it's the wider community in terms of higher taxes and various sorts of programs that will pay for that child.
And you say the answer lies with policies, perhaps similar to the effort that was put into discouraging teenage pregnancies, which I know in Milwaukee was very successful in terms of being one of the highest rates in the nation to going down quite a bit in recent years due to more education and availability of contraception and other things. You're saying a similar type campaign could be pushed for adult women.
Well, here's the problem. Before we saw a decline in teen pregnancy, we had to come to some agreement, some consensus, cultural consensus, that in fact teen pregnancy was a problem and that we really did want to discourage it. The impact of education, of more use of contraception, less sexual activity, both of those things went into the decline of teen pregnancy. Was secondary. That is, first there was a real general feeling, yes, this is a bad idea. We are nowhere near there when it comes to the problems I'm describing here of early single motherhood. In fact, if you saw any of the mail that I got in response to the Times article that we're discussing, you'd know that we're in fact in great disagreement about it. And therefore, it's not possible to have policies or have programs that push that message, because we really don't agree about it. And until that happens, I think that we're not going to see much of a change.
Yeah. Kathy writes on Facebook, "We have no safety nets anymore. We punish single moms and try to make life as difficult as possible. We pay them poverty wages. We take away their food stamps. We take away school lunches, any means of support."
Well, I'm not sure what Kathy's talking about exactly. I mean, we are not taking away food stamps from children. We are not getting rid of school lunches, as far as I know. Perhaps something's going on in Wisconsin that's very different than elsewhere. As for the poverty wages, it's true that the wages at the bottom are very stagnant. They're very low. It is extremely difficult these days to manage on a single income. This is one of the reasons that I'm pushing, committed relationships before you have children, because it's extremely difficult to do. I would like to see more supports for lower income folks. It's still not going to change the reality that children who are born to low income single mothers are going to have less of a chance in life than children who are born to parents in a stable relationship. And that's just something that the government cannot change, no matter how many programs it introduces.
Next, we go to David in Dodgeville. Hello, David.
Hello. I'm just kind of wondering if she knows any studies. Like here in the state of Wisconsin, it almost is promoted that women that don't want to work have multiple children from multiple fathers considered their income, so they can have to be stay home at mom.
Yeah. Well, didn't we change welfare as we know it to address that, Kay?
Yes, we did. And the there was an increase in the number or the percentage of single mothers, poor single mothers, who were in the workforce as a result of welfare reform. But it's not 100% by any means. So I don't know the figures for Wisconsin, but I do know that in many states there's been a falling off of pushing the work first approach to welfare reform. So, you know, it is possible that we're seeing more mothers who are not working and who are on welfare. But remember, welfare also is time limited. So you have about 5 years where you can be supported by the government completely, and then you're off. Although in many states, again, there are all kinds of other safety nets to pick up the slack. I know in New York, where I'm from, you can go on a state program in certain cases where the state will continue to pay welfare benefits even if the federal government is not.
Greg in Milwaukee is with us now. Hello, Greg.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. This is a very interesting topic, but it kind of scares me. I think we're going down kind of a slippery slope, not with the conversation, but with some of the ideas we're coming up with. I think it's more of a personal responsibility of men to take care of their children. The RAND Corporation did a study years ago when jobs were plentiful for single moms, for men, for everyone, the poverty rates went down significantly. Now that we're going through some tough economic times, poverty rates, of course, have increased. I just think that if we don't want to go down the road that China did years ago, limiting the amount of children for anyone. I just think that it's a slippery slope that we better watch out. I mean, in our discussion this mm-hmm. morning, because it's, you know, you don't want to give the impression that one economic group is better off with children, one is not, because each economic group has problems within itself. So that's more of my comment.
And thank you, Greg. Well, so the answer to this is let's get some more jobs. Okay.
Oh, absolutely. we need to have a thriving economy, and we need to have a stronger labor market at the bottom, and we need to have the income supports when that market is not working properly. So I couldn't agree more. There's no question about it. But I want to remind the caller that single motherhood, the rates of non-marital births, and that's really what I'm focused on here because that tends to be the most unstable arrangement for young children. Non-marital births have been going up through good times and bad since 1965 or so. We have no evidence that it's just a bad economy. In fact, if anything, things stabilized a bit during the recession, simply because fertility rates went down, for everybody. So I don't think that, we can say, well, you know, it's bad economic times that are making, people, decide to have children outside of marriage. There has been a big cultural shift in our attitudes towards marriage. And if you look at surveys, from, for instance, Pew Research, and who does the best in these, you'll find that people, young people, increasingly don't see marriage and childbearing as having much to do with each other. There may be economic reasons that people are more likely to marry at younger ages or older ages, but the collapse of marriage among many Americans is really largely driven by a sense that children are their own thing, and it's no longer a package deal.
We have to take a break, but when we come back, I'll have our guest, Kay Heimowitz, address Greg's uneasiness about this slippery slope that he's hearing, and maybe some sort of effort to stop low-income people from having children. We'll see what she says about that, and we'll welcome more of your questions, too. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about how single motherhood hurts children. And our guest wrote a piece about that that appeared in the New York Times. She is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and a contributing editor at City Journal, Kay Heimowitz. And we heard from Greg, who was concerned that we were headed down a slippery slope, at least in terms of possible answers to the issue of the problems that face children born into poverty and how those problems can face those children for the rest of their lives. So, Kay, what exactly are we advocating here? Are you advocating here? What is the answer to this problem?
Well, as I said before, what I'm advocating is that people wait to have children until they are in a committed relationship, which they imagine to, and they hope, and they will work towards continuing throughout their child's lives. And that, I don't know why that would be the same thing as telling them they couldn't have children. The poor have always, up until about 1965, have always tried to marry before they had kids. This is something that's relatively new in human history. The idea that, well, the poor don't need to marry, it's just not anything that any society has ever supported before. So I think the very fact that we might imagine that telling people the best arrangement for your child is if you wait to have a child until you are married, until you are in a very committed long-term relationship, that is the same as telling them they can't have kids is part of the problem that I'm trying to describe about reaching a consensus on this issue.
Right. So, but how do we encourage that to happen? Just saying it isn't necessarily going to make it happen.
Well, I don't agree. I think the way that norms develop, the way that people decide to live their lives, is very much a product of people's thinking about these things. In other words, I remember saying to a friend of mine who was also asking some of the questions you're asking about this, I said, you would never have considered, you would never have considered having a child outside of marriage, and you would never have considered having a child when you were 21 without being married and then going on to have another child. Why not? And he said, well, because it isn't done. it just wasn't done in his world. And that's right. I think that people make those decisions or do those things or have in their mind scripts, life scripts, that are determined in large measure by the people around them. And if they're growing up in a world where nobody expects them to marry before they have children, well, they very likely won't.
Edward, in this email says, the chief and durable cause of single motherhood of poor, predominantly black women, is the mass incarceration of black men. This, coupled with the re-engineering of the economy to manufacture poverty, that's the real issue to address.
So a couple things. One is I would like to see some prison reform. And I would like to see some movement away from mass incarceration. Will that solve the problem we're talking about? I don't think so. Remember that it wasn't a caller, it was a writer, I guess, says, well, it's among the mass incarceration of blacks is the problem. But in fact, black out-of-wedlock birth rates are high even among educated blacks. So there's something more going on in among blacks that's a little bit different than it is for other groups. That's playing a small role, I would say. Most of the people who are in prison most of the men who are in prison are not necessarily going to be the best and most reliable fathers for women, and so it's not clear to me how much things would change on that. As for poverty, again, I want to remind people: poor people always married before they had children. up until about 30, 40 years ago. This is something relatively new, that we would have a different set of rules for the poor than we would for the well-off. And I think that it's not working to their advantage and really reduces the possibility of moving out of poverty for the next generation.
Leah on Twitter says, better sex ed classes and parenting classes. Budget cuts have forced many high schools to cut family and consumer ed programs. Your response to that?
Yeah. The sex ed, we've been doing that for a very long time. The programs that I've seen have been evaluated, they often do reduce non-marital or pregnancy, teen pregnancy. But remember, we're now talking about young women in their 20s. We have reduced teen pregnancy quite a bit, as we talked about earlier. Most non-marital births are among women in their 20s, and they do tend to know exactly how to forestall a birth if they wanted to. As I mentioned before, about 40% of non-marital births are intended, and that number went up a while back. It didn't go down. So it's not like we are seeing an epidemic of women who have no idea how to stop themselves from getting pregnant. That's simply not the case.
So how come Bill Clinton and Barack Obama are the products of a single-parent household? You're not necessarily sentenced to a life of doom if you're in these circumstances?
Well, of course not, nor is a child who grows up in a stable home necessarily going to be successful. These are outliers. You know, one of the things that happens when you're in an advanced society and you have these millions upon millions of statistics or people that you can study is you begin to see larger trends and larger in the meaning of big cultural and social shifts that you might not be able to know without it. So now that we can study child outcomes, and we can see children who are going to college and getting good jobs and doing well in life, we can only talk about those large numbers. Yes, we do have children of single mothers who are doing brilliantly. There's no question they're doing a lot better maybe than their friends who are in married couple families, but those are the exception. We know that from the statistics, and it has been reaffirmed over and over again in study after study.
In our final less than a minute, where do you see this issue going? Do you see a consensus as to what to do about it coming anytime soon?
I really don't, and I say that not in despair, but in sadness. I think that there's something in the American character that says, but we're individuals and we make our own decisions, and we just don't want to get into this. We don't want to have this discussion. We don't want to discourage people from doing what they want, especially when it comes to something so vital, so central to their lives as planning, as having a family. So I would like to see more encouraging signs that people are ready to take this on. But I have to say, I don't have much evidence for it yet.
Thank you very much for being with us. Kay Heimowitz is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Thanks to Robin Cherry for producing and directing this program, and to Christy Taylor for on-air production. This is the Ideas Network.